just to refresh your memories about 13, we're looking at what are called checkpoints, which are control points along the cell cycle. But remember, they are not objects like this picture shows them. A given checkpoint is simply a set of chemical conditions. If those conditions exist in the cell, then the cell will be allowed through the checkpoint and be able to go from, for instance, G1 to S, depending on the checkpoint. But if the chemical conditions are not present in the cell at the given moment, then the cell will remain in that part of the cell cycle. And what we see in slide 14 is a cell getting the so-called go-ahead signal, kind of like this gate going down, but really what it means is that the correct mixture of chemicals is present for it to be able to go. There are sometimes a situation in which a cell never gets the go-ahead signal. And I think I was talking about this last time. Maybe it was you, maybe it was my other section, but skin cells, for instance, get the go-ahead pretty quickly because skin cells need to proliferate. They need to divide more or less continuously because you're losing so many millions of skin cells each day, you have to replace them. You replace them by creating new ones. And so the skin cells go through their cell cycle pretty quickly. On the other hand, a typical neuron will last as that one cell your entire lifetime. And they'll never get past this G1 checkpoint to go to S. Because remember, to go to S means you're already making the commitment to prepare to divide. S is the first part of that. You have to replicate your genome first before you can divide. Well, neurons don't normally do that. And they're basically stuck in G1 permanently, and we just rename it as G0. It's nothing really that's different about G0. It just means that particular type of cell is going to stay in being that kind of cell for as long as the multicellular organism survives, till your death, in other words. Okay, so there is control of the cell cycle, and that leads to the question of how does the cell actually control the cycle? That's what 15 is about. And we're still learning the fine details of this, and we're only really scratching the surface here. But this shows you part of the chemical conditions I was talking about earlier, using some of the stuff that we know about it. At the top, you have a graph that is multiple cell cycles long. Notice the letters indicating the parts of the cell cycle. M is the mitotic phase. The end of M is the end of one cycle. And then G1, S, G2, M for another cycle, and so on. And what's graphed on that top graph are two things. Cyclin concentration is this one kind of sawtooth shape. And cyclin is a protein in the cell. Like so many things that do important jobs in cells, it's a protein. And what you see by the shape of that graph is that early on in each cell cycle, there's very little cyclin present. The Y value, the Y part of this graph is the concentration for this trace. And so low means that there's not much there. But eventually, the cell starts producing cyclin more and more, and it builds up, as you can see. Well, notice that when it gets built up to a higher concentration, then you simultaneously have a bunch of MPF activity. Now, MPF, obviously, is an acronym, and it stands for mitogen promoting factor. Now, a mitogen... Well, let me start over. A factor is a word that's often used in cell biology. Factor usually means a protein of some sort. So it's kind of different from the use of the word in everyday language, but factors in cells are proteins doing certain things. A mitogen, gen means create or cause. A mitogen is something that causes mitosis, just like a carcinogen is something that causes cancer. Okay? So a mitogen promoting factor, MPF here, notice in the bottom part of the slide, is really a combination of two different things shown separately here, CDK and cyclin. CDK is another acronym, and it stands for cyclin dependent kinase. So first of all, it is a kinase. What does that tell you it is? It's an enzyme. Good, because of that A-S-E ending. Kinase is not a specific enzyme. Kinase is a broad category. There's all kinds of different kinases. This is just one of them, cyclin-dependent kinase. But whatever kind of kinase it is, the reason it qualifies as a kinase is that it phosphorylates a protein. That's the job of kinases in general. They phosphorylate proteins. So now think back to when we were studying the various functional groups in whatever chapter that was, one of which was phosphate, right, as a group. And at the time I told you four or five different reasons why no one can live without phosphate. It's really important for a lot of reasons. You can't have DNA without phosphate. That enough is a reason. You can't have ATP without phosphate. But also, one of the things I told you is that dephosphorylation, removal of a phosphate from something, or phosphorylation, sticking a phosphate onto something, is a major way that cells can switch on or off proteins. By switching on or off, what I mean is activate them so they can do their job or deactivate them so they won't do their job. Turn them on or off. That's a valuable thing, especially for enzymes, which are proteins, of course. And most of the things that have these phosphate switches, in other words, most of the proteins that you can switch on or off by either phosphorylating or dephosphorylating them, are not only proteins, but specifically proteins acting as enzymes. That's valuable because you don't always want an enzyme to be working, right? Because if you have an enzyme that's working and it's present in the cell, it's going to catalyze whatever reaction it's specific for. Well, you don't always want to be running all your reactions. You want to turn them off sometimes as appropriate. You do that by turning enzymes on or off, because without the help of the enzyme, they happen so slowly that they're effectively turned off. You can do that a couple different ways. You could, if you want to turn off an enzyme, you could destroy it. Just digest it into amino acids. Of course, it's not going to work as an enzyme anymore, right? The problem with that is that that takes some time, for one thing. It also might be that the very next moment you need it to be turned back on. Well, you can't reassemble it. You'd have to go back to the gene that is the instructions for how to build that enzyme and build a brand new one, which also takes time and energy. So it's much more efficient if you can simply keep the enzyme there, but switch it on when you want it to work, switch it off when you don't want it to work. And that's where phosphorylation and dephosphorylation come in. A lot of enzymes are activated in one condition or the other. It's not necessarily the case that phosphorylation turns them on and dephosphorylation turns them off. It could be either. But anyway, kinases are other enzymes whose job it is to do the phosphorylation of these other enzymes. Okay? So cyclin-dependent kinase is a specific kinase whose job it is to phosphorylate proteins that are involved in control of the cell cycle. MPF is a combination of cyclin-dependent kinase and cyclin. If they're both present in the cell, the two will join, kind of like lock and key as you see here. And that together is an MPF, a mitogen promoting factor, because that connection between CDK and cyclin acts activates the cyclin, the kinase itself, which then is going to activate something else by phosphorylating it. Okay? So it's kind of an indirect complexity, but this is how things work in cells. There can be many levels of control that happen this way. Well, notice from this bottom part that CDK, cyclin-dependent kinase, is always present in the cell. But cyclin isn't. Early on, cyclin concentration very low, effectively none in the cell. And then eventually the cell starts producing it. And so slowly and gradually, the cyclin concentration rises. Therefore, as the cyclin concentration rises later and later in the cell cycle, it becomes more and more likely that it will encounter one of these CDKs that have been there all along, and therefore the two can combine, and that's what causes the MPF to be activated, causing mitosis. It's a mitogen promoting factor, a protein complex that causes mitosis to happen. Okay? So that's just part of the control of the cell cycle, but it's obviously this is a molecular basis. As I was saying, it's all based on molecular signaling. And the checkpoint really is that particular chemical set of circumstances. Okay, let's talk more about the controlled cell cycle in 16. Here we have fibroblasts, which are connective tissue cells, being isolated from the body and then put into suspension, liquid suspension, in this Erlenmeyer flask. You can keep cells alive, individual cells, if you give them the proper nutrients. And the suspension is used for two different tests here. In one, you plate some of these cells out onto a surface. That's what it means to plate them out. You put them onto an agar that has correct nutrients to keep those cells alive, and they will stay alive. But if all you give it is nutrients and you don't give it this PDGF, which stands for platelet-derived growth factor, another factor, it's another protein. Platelet-derived growth factor is itself a signal to tell the cells it's appropriate to divide. And that's why it's a growth factor. We grow by adding new cells. The chemical that tells the cells to split to add new cells is a growth factor. So anyway, if you don't have the PDGF, but you just feed them, they will stay alive, but they won't split. They won't increase in number. On the other hand, if you give them nutrients plus PDGF, then they start splitting into two new cells each, which increases the population of cells. Right? So that's another aspect of control of the cell cycle. But there's more to it than that. In 17, we're looking at another thing called anchorage dependence, which is particularly important in tissues that form membranes, like skin, for instance. So it's not enough in certain cells to give them the chemical signals that tell them they need to divide. They also have to have the additional signal of being anchored or connected to a surface. In other words, if you kept them in that liquid suspension, even with the chemical signals telling them they should divide, they won't. But if they're connected to a surface, then they will start dividing. And that's an artificial situation that replicates a real situation in the body, right? If you injure your skin, for instance, even if it doesn't look like a big cut, microscopically you've lost millions of cells. And you basically have a hole in that membrane. Used to be continuous cells, now there's a hole, missing cells. The dead cells are dead. They're not going to be able to do anything to heal, right? But the cells that survive need to be spurred on to go through their cell cycle and divide to create new cells that can then replace the ones that you've lost. All right? Well, they do that if they are already anchored in place and they receive the signal. But then that brings up density-dependent inhibition. So this little vessel that they have these cells growing in is really just like a little area of your skin. If you have an injury, then there's space that needs to be filled where the dead cells were. And as long as there is space, they will, and they're getting the signal, they will multiply. But eventually, there's going to be enough cells to fill the whole space. And so all of the cells will be touching each other. That's when density-dependent inhibition comes in to turn them off, so they won't keep splitting. In other words, they'll divide only to fill enough space, heal the wound, basically, and then they'll be told not to keep splitting. And you can get them back to dividing simply by taking some amount in this artificial example. Then they'll fill the hole up again, and density-dependent inhibition will turn them off again. That's how things happen normally, in normally operating cells that have a well-controlled cell cycle. But things don't always happen normally. There can be defects in cells that lead to cancer. Cancer is a genetic disorder that messes up the control of the cell cycle. And when I say it's a genetic disorder, that simply means that DNA is involved. It doesn't mean it's a heritable disorder. You don't pass it on to your offspring. But cancer is caused by damage to DNA. Now, there's all kinds of DNA, right? But the DNA that makes up our genes, well, what is the job of a gene? The job of a gene is to serve as a set of instructions indirectly for how to make a protein. All right? And there's all kinds of proteins that do different jobs. Each of them has a gene telling the cell how to make it. Some of those genes, though, the proteins that they code for happen to be these proteins that are involved in controlling the cell cycle. So if you undergo mutation, which is a damage to the DNA, sunlight, smoking, just accident, whatever, there are all kinds of things that can cause mutation. If it happens to be one of these genes that correspond to a protein whose job it is to control the cell cycle, then the cell can lose the ability to know whether or not it's supposed to divide. And it can think, so to speak, that it's supposed to keep dividing, supposed to go through its cell cycle quickly and blow through its checkpoints. And therefore it loses density-dependent inhibition, which is part of the control. So instead of filling up the space and stopping, the cells will just continue to divide. You see them building up here. That's what cancer is. It starts as one cell whose DNA has been changed in a way that makes it lose its control of the cell cycle. And that cell, of course, doesn't know that its DNA is defective. It's simply using its DNA the way any cell does, meaning it's going to make an identical copy of it when it's about to split, right? So you start out with one invisible damaged cell that becomes cancerous. The problem is when it divides into two cells, they're both genetically identical to the original one, so they're both cancerous as well. They both think they're supposed to go through the cell cycle immediately, and so now you have 4 and then 8, and that's how a tumor develops. This also, by the way, this damage to the DNA causing cancer explains why you have so much more cancer in older people than in younger people. Their DNA has been around much longer, having more opportunities at being accidentally or intentionally damaged. You know, that's why the longer you smoke, for instance, the more likely it is to develop cancer. You're damaging more and more DNA. Eventually, you'll hit the right DNA that will cause cancer. Well, 18 is just a little bit more about cancer. Physicians make a big deal about early detection of cancer, and that's because it is so curable if it's caught early. A tumor is really nothing but identical offspring of one cell that went bad originally, right? One, a defective cell that mutated and lost its control of its cell cycle originally. That wouldn't be detectable, a single invisible cell. But like I said, that's going to lead to two and then four. It's going to double. Eventually, you can see the tumor or detect the tumor. And the tumor itself at that point might not be a big deal if it's not really interfering with the healthy cells that are around it. A tumor, though, eventually will be classified as malignant, which is simply a word that means bad acting, when it gets big enough that it starts interfering with the normal functioning of the organ it's in, simply because it's growing out of control and the other healthy cells can't do their job effectively. It can be removed, though. If you remove every one of those defective cells, if you're sure that you can get the tumor either surgically or chemically or radiatively, then that cures the cancer. Now, it's nothing saying that your other cells might not turn into cancerous cells. They could at any time, of course. But you can. That's why early detection is so good, because it allows you to totally cure the cancer, hopefully. Eventually, though, the tumor, if it's malignant, can get even worse. A malignant tumor is localized if it stays put. But they're all, the entire tumor is just a bunch of identical copies of cells. And sometimes one or more of those cells will become detached from the tumor, make its way into either blood or lymph, both of which move around in the body. And so they can take a ride in blood or lymph and lodge themselves in some other organ and start a new tumor there, because they still think they're supposed to divide since they've lost the control. And that process, which is the worst form, is called metastasis. That's when it becomes much more difficult to treat and becomes much more life-threatening. That's the chapter. So let's go on to the next.